You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, hour number two. As the Browns return to work here in Berea for OTA number seven. They'll have OTA number eight tomorrow, OTA number nine on Thursday before wrapping up that portion and coming back for the mandatory mini camp the following Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you here. Gibbs, by the way, I did get one question from somebody before we go to Kirby Wilson, and that is, how do you drink on a zero-turn mower?
I think it's impossible. Turn. Hold on. I got to look up the exact. I don't know if it's a zero turn. I can sit. It's got a cup holder. It's got levers that go back and forth. I turn.
What does a zero turn mower mean? Because I don't own such technology.
Basically, it's not like you can only turn one angle or whatever. You can turn. Well,
like a 360 degree turn?
Yes.
Or 180 degree?
Something like
rather.
That.
Dude, I just Googled those. That's no joke, man.
Dude, they're nice. Yeah, zero turn.
That is legit.
Dude, it is legit. It is legit. And I've got an Indians, like, baseball helmet, like batting helmet from when I was a kid, and I have built cup holders on the sides with straws. It is not uncommon to see me mowing my my lawn and sipping cold beverages directly from my helmet.
Man. When I come back, I want to come back and be a radio program director.
Yeah, man.
I'm not a radio program director.
If you were, you would have been on ESPN earlier today.
What a joke.
Gibbs, zero turn, so that's crazy.
It's awesome. It's fantastic. It can mow any lawn, trust me, and it can go over anything.
So let me ask you a question. If that's the case, why not just wait until the day and just mow it once?
Because the lawn definitely grows back quicker in certain parts.
Okay.
And then you end up with, you know, I open up the side and just blow it out the side. Like it doesn't, and then you start to end up with giant just clumps all over the lawn.
Yeah. You don't want it to be clumpy.
No. And if you can do it about 4 days out, the wind just takes it and it's all good.
Do you like to? Are you going to mow like a special design in for the wedding? Since you have this fancy mower, like
Monica, it drives her crazy because I am super anal about
how
the lawn looks.
Do you cross cut it?
I do.
So it does take. So
you do a checkerboard.
You do double. So it
Correct.
Takes you twice as long.
Yes, but like for the wedding, I'll probably just go north south. I'll just go something simple because I don't have time to do total cross cuts and everything like that.
You know that you could make a heart out there?
I always mow it a different way every time. You never want to mow it the same way twice in a row.
And you never mow another man's lawn.
No. When I first met Monica, her goal was to lower the blade as much as possible and have the grass dead by 4th of July so she wouldn't have to mow and she could just sit in the pool for the rest of the summer. I was horrified at that and said, you're not allowed to ever touch the lawnmower again. I've gotten her to the point where she does.
Green grass is nice to look at.
It's nice. It's. I mean, you got to walk back to the pool. Do you want to walk on dirt? Come on.
Although this year, whatever that, you know, that pollen that's on the end of the grass.
Oh, it's horrible.
Is like out of control this year.
Yeah, very much so.
I've had to call in the Allegra D, which is that's like for me, that's like calling in the heavy artillery to fight these allergies. And it still doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't understand about allergies, though, is when I'm on the golf course or I'm outdoors all day, it doesn't bother me. It's as soon as I come inside and like get out of the allergy environment.
And you're in the air conditioning?
Yeah, why?
Yes.
What does that
know.
Mean?
I had the same problem the other day. I worked outside. I put the garden in. I did all this stuff. Had no problems. Went to bed. Woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and like my whole head released. And I had like this runny nose. I was snotty. It was disgusting all day.
That's this weekend as well?
Yes.
No drinks. Snotty. Disgusting. Doing hardcore manual labor 9 hours a day. You really had a winning weekend.
I'm telling you. I am happy to be at work.
I mean, I like the fact that you have this zero-turn mower, which is impressive. But
hey, I'll put it on the trailer. I'll wheel it over to your place, man. I'll let you mow with it. It's good. It's good fun.
Take it. It looks fun. It looks. Which color do you have?
I've got an orange one, bright orange.
Nice. Good for you.
Yeah, it's nice.
Is that a beast?
It is.
Oh wow!
Thank God. It is a lifesaver and a half, man. That backyard is, it can get ugly quickly.
Man, I aspire to have my own golf cart. You have this thing.
I had my own golf cart in San Diego.
I want one so bad.
It was the best.
Really? Oh, God.
Oh, it was amazing.
Like, did you deck it out?
Nah, I came home one day from golfing, and my wife had, I think it was either for birthday or Father's, I think it was Father's Day, and there was a golf, it's my son was probably 9 months old. There was a golf cart for me, a full-size one, and there was a golf cart for him. You know, like, so she cool. went to the Toys R Us and bought him, like, a little mini golf cart and had it put together. It was the best. Just to be able to go for a golf cart ride and just move, like, we lived on a big property, you know, lived on a private street, so you're not competing with many cars, so it was awesome. Just, I mean, to go up and check the mail, like, walking up, you know, 250-foot driveway, you know, to go get the mail, jump in the golf cart, buzz up, buzz back. It was awesome.
Someday I aspire to live in a golf course community in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I can just
Monica's parents live on a 27-hole retirement community down in Florida outside of Fort Myers in the winter months. They leave the day after Christmas. They just got back over the weekend, and they have their own golf cart and 27 holes of golf, 5 different pools to choose from. It's outstanding.
That's the life.
It is the life.
That sounds fantastic. It's good for them.
Yeah.
One thing that we also think is going to be fantastic, this is called a transition, is the Browns running game. A lot of confidence right now in Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson. Kirby Wilson, the Browns run game coordinator, spoke with the media, and here is what he had to say.
Well, what do you like about Isaiah Crowell most?
First of all, let me say hello to my fighting the line brother over there, Mr. Doug Deacon. How you doing, Doug? I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question, please? I think Isaiah is a complete player in terms of the tools that he brings to the game. He's explosive. He's got really nice size. He's got natural ability to play the position. And he's a bright young man, so football comes easy to him in terms of the preparation part.
You work with some dynamic pass catchers out of the backfield. What do you see in Duke Johnson? Are there any similarities to some of the guys that you've worked with in the past?
I think so. You know, when Duke came out, I was part of the process at the combine of interviewing him and evaluating him on film. And I thought that Duke had a lot of those qualities that a lot of great runners from the backfield have in terms of being a receiver. He's got a receiver's background. He played it in high school. He was a playmaker, whether coming from the backfield or detached out of the backfield. He's very comfortable in space. He's got natural ability to catch the football, and he knows how to run routes. So he is what you would call an ultimate weapon, because he's also a running threat, obviously, and he's a pass-receiving threat.
You get more out of him as a running back, though. You know, I know you guys never like to talk about what happened last year when you weren't here, but they didn't use him a whole lot in the running game, and they weren't very patient with him. Can he develop into a good running back, running the ball?
Yes, I believe so. And part of that is just the preparation of understanding who you're reading, where to put your eyes prior to the snap of the football, and then having the discipline to stay on track with your vision and knowing where the pieces fit to the puzzle. Because really, that's what defensive football is. There's going to be a player in every gap. And if your preparation is done properly, you're going to know where those pieces are, and you're going to know how to move those pieces to their gaps to read it better and make better decisions.
What role will a fullback have in this offense, and what kind of fullback are you looking for?
We like the guy that we're working with right now. We think Malcolm Johnson can develop into a top-flight fullback. We think that he's got the fullback demeanor that we're looking for. We think he's got really good size. We think he's got excellent football intelligence. He's proven that to us already. You can't overload him. He's really, really sharp. And I liked him coming out of college. Cleveland did a nice job when they selected him, because I had my eyes set on him at another place. And I'm fortunate enough to be working with him now. And I think he's got a huge upside.
Can you talk about the commitment that you guys will make to running the football here, and how this is going to be, you know, back to what a lot of Cleveland Browns fans probably expect from their football team?
Absolutely. I think when you look at Coach Jackson's background, yes, he is a, as people call, a quarterback guru. He's done a tremendous job over the years with that. But when you really look at his record in terms of how he runs the football and the amount that he runs it, you're going to find out that he really truly does enjoy running the football. So we're going to be a run-oriented football team. Everything starts with the run game and our offensive line and our backs, and I think we build it from there. And as Coach told us, we're going to be a physically dominating, violent running football team.
Isaiah and Duke were both up here last week talking about protecting the quarterback too. Where are those guys as far as, you know, being able to pick up blitzes and protect the quarterback in the passing game?
It's a work in progress. You know, it's as a running back, you're doing most of your time is spent on running, obviously, ball security, because that goes hand in hand. And then if you're not receiving it, then you have to be a pass protector. So if that's what your life is like in the National Football League as a running back, you have to spend a huge amount of your practice time and individual time on ball security and blitz pickup. So it's a work in progress right now. We're going through the fundamentals, the technique that's involved with every fundamental. And in blitz pickup, you know, there's two types of pass rushers. There's speed rushers and there's speed to power rushers. And they've got to be prepared to block both types. And they will be by the time the season starts.
What about some of the other backs? What have you thought of them?
Early on, very impressive. And we've got a really young group. And it's probably the youngest collection of backs I've ever worked with. And it's exciting because each one of them brings a different trait to the table. And they're very eager. They all want to prove themselves and have a career in the National Football League. And that's part of my job, you know, is developing backs. And if you look at my background as a coach, that's where I've done my best work, and that's developing players who weren't maybe drafted or who were late-round guys into being prominent football players in the National Football League.
Are you looking forward to giving the Steelers a little bit of their own medicine in terms of, you know, running right down their throats?
No question about it.
Exciting things for you to be here, to be able to do that?
Absolutely. This is arguably probably the most physical division in the National Football League, and we call it big boy football, and it's all about attitudes, and it starts with the run game. You've got to be able to run it, and you've got to be able to stop the run on defense. So we're going to take pride in that and being physically superior than our opponent, and we got to make sure that we control the line of scrimmage. We got to secure the football. We got to be the most violent runners in the National Football League.
That's Browns run game coordinator Kirby Wilson talking about his young backs. Obviously a big fan of what they've got in Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson. Also big fan of Malcolm Johnson, the fullback last year, who kind of seemed a little bit lost in that offense, comes back as an opportunity here in year number two to play a role for the Cleveland Browns. When we come back, Matt and I will take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. We will also go through the offensive side of the ball and list in the order of most confidence to, you got to show me, to the Gibbs level of confidence, all the different position groups on the offensive side of the football. That's coming up next on CBD.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook outside your door. Just an old.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. All right, Gibbs, I want you to participate in this as well. Rank the offensive positions from most confident to the Jason Gibbs, they got to show me level. So we've got, obviously, the groups are quarterback, running back, tight end, wide receiver, offensive line. So five groups on the offense. So you can say, should we go from least to most or most to least?
Let's go most to least.
Most to least. All right. So Gibbs, we'll start with you. We'll go Gibbs, Wilhelm, and then me. Most position group you are most confident in the offensive side of the ball headed into the season?
God, this is a tough one. I'm going to say, most confident?
Yes. We just explained the rules, Gibbs.
Yeah, well, it's like higher or lower, which you do to me every week. I think I might go wide receiver.
You are most confident in the wide receiver position. Why is that, Gibbs? You are the ultimate show me guy, and you basically are turning your position over to guys that you've never seen.
I have a feeling it can only be an upgrade.
It's phenomenal. It's a feeling. I thought. What?
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag and go. The wide receivers is the bottom of my list.
Okay, so you and Gibbs are already confident in this.
Okay, but hold on. I'm gonna go running backs. Okay. Obviously, we just heard from Kirby Wilson. It's a very appropriate that we come right into this segment, and I think all the reasons they didn't draft a guy, sign a guy, experiment with a guy is because they believe they have the guys. Hugh Jackson didn't feel the need. Sashi Brown didn't feel the need. So if those who make the decisions are that confident in these two, I'm that confident in these two. And I like their games. I just want to see them play their best.
I like that you stole my thunder as well, and I think you made the perfect point. And for me, it is a running back. That's the position I've always been a Crow guy. I love what Duke brings to the table. And when you have 14 picks, have 11 undrafted free agents, and yada, 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 and the one position on the whole roster that you don't address.
We brought in kickers.
We brought in like 8 of them at one point. The one position you don't address is running back. That says something to me.
I know they brought in Terrell Watson, but
I'm going to bring in, I'm going to say the running backs are the group that I am the most confident headed into this season.
I need them to stay healthy, and I'm not sure they can. I think I worry about Duke's durability.
How do you know that the wide receivers that we drafted that are going to take a significant portion of our receptions can even catch in an NFL game?
I got a feeling that at least one or two of these guys have to be able to do
this. This is the anti-Gibbs argument. This is unreal.
One or two of these guys has to be able to play.
Okay.
Am I wrong in thinking that?
Okay.
You'll
see where I have the wide receivers, but I'm just talking about most. I've seen Isaiah Crowell have 100-yard multiple touchdown games. I've seen Duke Johnson play in the National Football League at a high level, and I think this offense is going to utilize both of those guys even more effectively than before.
I think you needed to go get another running back, and you didn't, and that concerns me when it comes to your depth.
Even though the guy they brought in was a Hugh Jackson guy? So now you're worried about the backups? I'm just talking about in general, like right now. I hear you, though. Depth is an issue. Depth will make one of my positions lower than other people might think it would be. Okay.
I worry about it. I worry about that position because
you're going to have the opportunity to rank the running backs. You've got the you're the most confident for the first time in the history of a Cleveland Browns season. You are the most confident in the wide receiver position. So what are you second most confident in?
Why am I leading this off?
Because it's kind of fun. Because you might say something like wide receivers, which is great. I hope you're right.
Oh, God.
You're quarterback next.
No, I'm going to – you know what? I thought about making quarterback number one. I actually did.
Wow.
I'll go O-line.
Okay.
I concur. I'm going to go offensive line as well.
All right. I got
and
one.
I think it's – running back made a whole lot of sense for every reason you and I both had running back number one. But I think O-line maybe by default is number two for me because I think I have questions looming with the three other groups.
Are we going to go the same in a row?
I don't know. Mine aren't going to change. So I'm going to go offensive line second.
Offensive line was second for me as well because you're still returning at the end of the day one of the best in the game, Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio, who was a very, very good left guard. You've got John Greco, a very solid right guard. So three of your five starters are back. Cam Irving was drafted to play center, and everybody we've talked to on the show, out on the field, et cetera, is very pleased with what Cam Irving is doing at the center position and feel like that he's going to be fine. And then there have been good reviews so far on Alvin Bailey,
yes,
on Spencer Drango, and on Austin Pastor. So I think that
Sean Coleman,
who hasn't been
our
out
number,
there yet.
You know, a draft pick.
Sure. So I feel pretty good about the offensive line, the state of the offensive line. I think it was overrated severely last year, and I think it will exceed expectations this year. So that's going to be number two for me. All right, Gibbs, third most confident.
I'm going to say the tight end position.
I will go tight end position as well.
All right,
I've made this argument that there's Gary Barnage, and there's no one else, and that is why, you know, I put them where they is. Barnage is the reason why we're number three, because I think there's bigger questions at the other two position groups as well. You have Barnage; he's proven it. He did it last year. This offense sets up well for Barnage to have a similar season, or at least to be a similar threat with a similar number of targets. Can he replicate what he did last year? I don't know. I hope he does, but I hope he doesn't have to.
I'm going to go with the tight ends also. So Gary Barnidge brings stability to that position. I happen to be a big fan of what Seth DeValve or EJ Bibbs can bring in that pass catching role. And then you've got Randall Telfer, who the coaches are excited about in that blocking role. But at the end of the day, for me, I'm more concerned with my pass catching than I am with my blocking at the tight end position.
I don't and need so another I feel blocker. Pretty, I Go feel catch me footballs.
I feel pretty good about that. I feel pretty good about where we are at that spot. So that's third most confident. All right. Fourth most confident position on the offensive side.
I go running back.
Okay. And just because of the depth.
I don't like the depth, and I didn't see production from that position last year until the season didn't mean anything.
Okay.
And I will also throw this in, and that's not to say that this team just abandoned the running game. I think we have to admit last year they just abandoned the running game because they didn't know how to run the football. They had a great offensive line, but our offensive system didn't know how to utilize running backs.
Yeah.
And that might be part of it. And
I also think we might be a better run-blocking offensive line this year than we were a year ago.
Might be possible. But that's truly a position I need to see to know. I love Kirby Wilson. I think the wealth of knowledge and experience he brings. Hugh Jackson's offense is a lot more running the football than people think. So that's truly a thing I need to see.
My fourth is the quarterback position. RG3, who I have confidence that RG3 can be the guy. I have confidence that Josh McCown can keep me in a football game. I don't know if RG3 is able to regain who he was in 12 and 13. I think the injuries that RG3 has sustained, or you know, him being injury plagued at some point, put a little doubt in my mind. Josh McCown, and as I said, his ability to he can keep you in games. He's serviceable, but if we're really shifting this turnaround, we need to go win some games. I need the guy that can win us a football game. And if you look at who he is and his makeup, in his his entire career, he doesn't win a lot of football games, regardless of what uniform he's wearing. But yet he always has a job. So serviceable at best. And then Cody Kessler, I essentially would be satisfied if Cody Kessler does not take one NFL snap this season.
I hope to God he doesn't.
Right.
And that's not a detraction on him.
Not at all.
I need him to watch and learn.
Exactly. So they're fourth on my list.
All right. I'm going the wide receivers fourth on my list. I think that that's a talented group. I love what I've seen from Hollywood Higgins. Raw. Corey Coleman, I think, very good. Peyton has an opportunity to come in and play right away. You still have Andrew Hawkins here, who fits a nice role in the slot. Terrell Pryor's coming on strong. It is an unknown group, but it's a group that a lot of assets have been thrown at, and I think that there is some dynamic nature to them, especially with Corey Coleman, as well as a very steady nature with guys like Higgins and Peyton. So I feel pretty good about the wide receivers, so I'll put them fourth, which means for you, what is last there, Jason Gibbs?
Quarterback.
Quarterback for you, receivers for you, man.
Receivers for me.
And I'm going to go quarterback for me as well, because it's just always a question mark for the Browns. And
sure,
RG3, we've seen it in the NFL 4 years ago. We need to see it again from him. And it's just, and for me, that's the one position I'm going to take a Gibbsian approach to. Until I see a quarterback with the Browns, I'm not buying into anything.
And ironically, to describe why I have the wide receivers at fifth, I was going to say, I'm going to take the Gibbs approach. You know, Terrell Pryor, to me, has yet to accomplish anything as a wide receiver in the NFL. To me, he's still a quarterback until he goes out and can go 5 receptions, 4 receptions, 7 receptions in a series of football games. Corey Coleman, I need to see him play like where we drafted him in the first round. That's something that has evaded this. We finally take a wide receiver in the first round. I need to see first-round wide receiver play out of Corey Coleman. And I think if you look at Hollywood Higgins and Peyton, if we can get portions of the players that they were at their highest level in college football, I'd be satisfied. Because it's the growth process that I'm very interested in. It's the nurturing process. It's the learning that of being in that room with Al Saunders each and every day that will help grow them. And I think, as we've said time and time again, not just with these receivers, but with this team, games 1 through 8, I want to see the flashes. Games 9 through 16, I want to see repeated, performances week after week, because that's what becoming a pro and showing that you can play and survive in this league is really all about.
Yeah. Consistency.
Yeah.
That's what they want, the consistent guy. And as we've said for this season, start off with some flashes, have them be more consistent as the season goes on and end there. So in sum, Gibbs, you went, if I recall, wide receiver, offensive line, tight end, running back, quarterback. With Vegas crushed when you went wide receiver number one right there with the biggest, one of the big upsets there. That'd be like, according to this BPI stuff, the Cavs sweeping the finals. As for number two, Matt Wilhelm, you started off with the running backs one, offensive line two, tight ends three, quarterback four, receiver five. And I went running backs, offensive line, tight ends, wide receivers, quarterbacks number five. Going to be an interesting season to see how this all plays out, but it will be a lot of fun. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from special teams coordinator Chris Tabor talking about that aspect of this football team. A very good interview, man, who can certainly speak with the microphone and has been the one guy that survived regime after regime. We'll hear his thoughts on where the Browns special teams are headed in 2016.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. It is time now to hear from special teams coordinator Chris Tabor.
All right, guys, we'll go ahead and get started. Another opportunity to get better once again today. We're working a lot of people trying to develop some new special teams players and find out what guys can do so we can properly put them in the right spot come training camp. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Different head coaches have different views of the priority of special teams in terms of a guy who'll make the roster because you like him a bunch, and some other coaches might prefer guys who are can help at a position and maybe on special teams.
Some head coaches like that. I can tell you this. Coach Jackson wants us to be second to none, and he puts high priority on our special teams. So I'm not concerned about the personnel. What we want to do is develop as many guys as we can. So when it comes decision time at the end of training camp and those things, we have a lot of options available for us.
Which of the four drafted receivers are candidates to return punts or kicks?
Oh, the Coleman kid is.
Punt or kickoff or both?
He can do both. He's an explosive player. And he's developing right now, so we're working on all those things.
Now, Lewis is advertised as being pretty fast, but is his just ball security an issue that you're unconfident with?
You know, right now, I'll be honest with you, Tony, some of those guys were gone, the Ricky Premier stuff, but he's a guy that we love his size, the way he can run, and we liked him on tape. Right now for us, for me to give any definitive answer, I really can't do it, and I'm not trying to avoid the question. It's just we're trying to figure out what those guys can and cannot do and tap into those things. But all the guys that we did draft are doing really well for us, and so are some of the free agent guys. So I'm really excited about this incoming class and just trying to get them up to speed. That's what we're concentrating on right now.
Can you just quickly give us an idea who you're looking at it? Kickoff returner and punt returner?
Well, you know, in the kick return, I mean, we still have, you know, obviously Justin Gilbert did a nice job for us. Raheem Mostert, when we picked him up, he did a really, really good job for us. So feel really that I think we're in good shape there. In the punt return area, you know, we're developing guys, and I think we'll be fine. I'm excited about the guys that are working at those spots, the Colemans of the world and Mosterts of the world. And Tremont Williams obviously has done a long time in Green Bay before he came here. We'll be fine.
When you look at a skill set like Marlon Moore has on special teams like that, and then you look at the rookies, what kind of skill sets do they have to kind of fill that kind of role as a receiver on special teams?
Well, you know, obviously it's tough to say because everyone's different. And I think that's kind of the fun part for us as you're going through practice right now, figuring out what a guy can do and then taking that skill set and putting him in a position so he can use those skills. Obviously, you're always looking for guys that can run, that can cover, that can get off blocks. Some things will be answered for us in preseason games. You know, right now, like I say, not to sound like a broken record on the deal, I mean, we're doing a lot of drill work, and we did that a lot of that stuff in phase two. Now in the OTAs, you're starting to incorporate drill work and scheme, and then that hopefully lays a foundation so when you get into training camp, you're up and running.
The Australian fellow who was in from Maryland and one Lou Groza. Seemed like an intriguing prospect. What happened with him, and where does Coons stand right now?
Travis Coons is doing a great job for us. The Craddock kid that came in rookie minicamp did a nice job for us. We just had to make a roster move there. And those things are always going to happen. You'll see on lots of teams, this is the time of year where there's a lot of movement and you're finding out about guys. But I'm always just worried about the guys that are here. And when you say about Travis Coons, he's gotten stronger. I think the lift on his we've really worked hard on the lift on his football, and I can see him improving there along with his kickoff. So I'm excited about which way he's trending.
Having said that, you guys, you tried out a few kickers at the rookie minicamp. You brought in the kid from Maryland, and then you guys just tried to claim a guy off waivers from Jacksonville, but he retired. So how important is it to find competition for Travis this summer?
Well, you want competition at all positions, and, it'll be at that position. It's no other than any other position. So I'm sure we'll continue to look. But we'll, like I say, just worried about the guys that we're working with right now and Travis is definitely matured. You can see it going into year two here and is taking the next step. I like the way that he's performing.
There's an obvious youth movement going on this roster, but Andy Lee is still there unchallenged. Is that taken for granted that he's the punter on this team?
Andy Lee set a gross and net record for the Cleveland Browns. He's pretty good. I like his chances. Athletic linebacker, smart, intelligent football player. I think the things that as you evaluated him on tape coming out of Wisconsin, you're seeing those. It's translating at this level. So I'm excited about him. Some things are new for him with regards to our world and what we do, but he works extremely hard at it, and he has a chance to be a good player.
Coleman at punt returner, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's his style in that regard?
He obviously has great speed. He has some really good short area quickness, make you miss type guy, and then has a good burst to go. He's doing a nice job for us, and we've just got to keep developing him.
About how long-term a first-round draft pick would be in a return position?
I'll be honest with you, I never think of them as first-round draft picks. I guess you could – If that's the best option and best player that you have, that's what you want to do. If that's going to help you win, that's what we want to do. I don't get caught up in where a guy's at just from this standpoint. Antonio Brown for the Steelers might be regarded as one of the best players in the NFL, and he's their punt returner.
What's your initial thoughts on the new touchback?
I think it's going to be an interesting year. With regards to, I'm not surprised that it went to that. I thought that the college game might have been a little ahead of the curve on that deal there. But at the same time, I think that there could be more returns possibly. There was only one team in the National Football League last year that got the ball on the average out to the 25-yard lines, and that was the Minnesota Vikings. Everybody else was under the 25-yard line. So people obviously will probably think maybe we can tackle it inside the 25, but it'll be interesting. I think there's probably be different schools of thought out there. Justin Tucker for the Ravens hit 60-some touchbacks. You're talking about almost 300 yards of field position difference now. So I think you just got to be prepared for everything.
Will it encourage teams to consider going kicking high and short?
I think it could. I think you saw it a little bit as I was evaluating kickers this year in college football. And talking and interviewing kickers, they said that their coaches, stressed more hang time, and if it was a little shorter, that was okay because they felt like they could get it tackled inside the 25 there. It'll be interesting. I think it'll be a different trend throughout the whole year. A lot of factors that'll go into it. Where you're playing at, weather, who's the returner, all those type of things.
Do you think, Chris, you'll be in the league at a point where kickoffs are eliminated?
I don't think so. I'm a football purist. I think this. I think that player safety should always be at the forefront. There is no doubt about that. There's just a lot of other factors, you know, how would you execute an onside kick if there was no kickoff? You know, there's other things that maybe the league will, I'm sure that they're always looking at things, and they're always going to protect the player and protect the game. But obviously, as a special teams coach, I feel that it's an important play.
Coons, how valuable is experience in a kicker, even just the 1 year of experience?
I think it's tremendous. You know, when you first come into the league, you're trying, number one, you're trying to figure it out. Number two, you're trying to figure out your routine. What do I do on a daily basis? How many kicks? What's my stretching? What's my recovery? All those type of things. After going through a whole season, a player, obviously, just like we all do, as we get older, we get smarter. And he's really maturing. And I can see the difference in him from year one to year two, just in at this time right now. So I think they having the experience of last year and understanding what it's like to go out and have an opportunity to make big kicks, I think that's going to hopefully pay off for him.
Rich McKay and others have said that the kickoff is the most dangerous play based on injury data. Yeah. Is punting, the punt return close? Can you see, what's the difference?
The difference is you can get on in the punt return game. As a punt return player, obviously, I can get on the punt player, the cover player, and I can hold him up immediately. He doesn't have that running start. So I think there's the major difference. You know, you do have the protection of the fair catch. If I'm worried, I can always take a fair catch, and they should stay off of me. Whereas a kickoff, I have that time, and I feel like, boom, I can bring this thing out, and guys are running down unimpeded. It is. I understand that players are bigger, stronger, and faster now, and we have to always protect the player. But at the same time, I just think that it's a dynamic play. If you're really, for example, if you're really good on defense, and you want to pin them down there, I mean that plays to your strength. Then you have a short field. All those things. I just think that play. There's a reason why. You know, we start the game off with it because it sets. You have to be able to set field position.
Couldn't they incorporate some of those rolls into the kickoff then that you could get on a guy?
I think you know what. I think they're looking at that stuff. I don't know that for sure. I know as amongst our community, we're always talking to special teams coaches because you know obviously we don't want to see the play disappear. And like I say, I don't think it will. I really don't. But we always have to. You have to think of the player, and you have to think of player safety first and foremost.
Cover your personal situation in terms of you had to survive another regime change to be sitting up there. How tense was that? In the transition from Mike to you.
I mean, the transition's always tense. You know, it's. Anytime you're working for someone new, we can probably all relate. It's as if you're going to school for the first day. You have a new teacher. It's a new school. You have to figure out what the rules are, how it works, what's expected. And the great thing about Coach is he spells everything out very crystal clear, what he wants and how he wants it done. And so it makes it very nice to work for him. And it's going well. I'm like I say, I've always been blessed to be here, and I want to help the Cleveland Browns be a winner.
Kickoffs again, if teams do go for more hang time, that would probably lead to more returns, which would kind of defeat the purpose of the rule. Is there a risk in it? I mean, is that?
No, I think your statement is correct. I could see an increase in returns. I think you could see maybe there's a the kicker puts it in a tough spot. He puts it 1 yard deep. Do you bring that out? I mean, now really, I mean, because you're saying the 25 is the new 20. I mean, it's 1 yard deep. Do you want to bring that out? Do you want to put pressure on them? Or what are the consequences? If we get tackled inside the 25, are we okay with that? I mean, there's going to be a lot of factors, game planning, weather, matchups, who the returner is, who's the kicker, all those things will go into play. I'm excited about it because it adds more factors into the play.
That's Brown special teams coordinator Chris Tabor on the rule change, which I think is going to have a big impact.
I do too.
I think you will see a lot of those. If a kicker can get to the point where he can kick it high and down to the goal line or the one, You're going to see that more, I think, than you'll see just booting it out and giving them the ball to 25.
Here's what I think it's going to do. Along those same lines is players are so confident in their abilities, and you see it all the time in these returners. That's why they bring it out from 6, 7, 8 yards deep, because they're banking on their teammates to get some blocks and hold guys up and their personal talent to be able to make guys miss and use their speed. It's you're going to have guys being coached to stand at a certain goal line, and if it goes over your head, let it go over your head or take that knee. Right? But guys are going to be in the heat of the moment with 70,000 people screaming for in your favor or against you. You're either going to do it for them or you're going to, you know, prove them wrong, and you're going to bring it out.
Well, the crazy thing is, you know, if you brought it out in that situation, got to the 15, it's like, all right, you cost us 5 yards. Now it cost, you get
first down.
Yeah, it's a first down. It's a whole nother first down you got to get to get into scoring position. All right, when we come back, we'll just wrap up our show here on this Tuesday. Tomorrow, Media Day, we'll hear from Hugh Jackson on Cleveland Browns Daily, as well as many, many more guests as rolling through as it's Media Day at OTA number 8 in Berea. We'll back final thoughts right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Today, again, want to give congratulations to the Browns. Ken Kovash, promoted to the Vice President of Player Personnel. Mike Setta, Director of Scouting. Kevin Mears, Director of Research and Strategy. Chisholm O'Parr, Director of Player Personnel. Dan Sagney, Director of Scouting. Bobby Vega, Director of Scouting. And the hire of Glenn Cook, the new Assistant Director of Scouting, who had spent 4 years with the Green Bay Packers. Congrats to them. Tomorrow, Media Day out here in Berea for OTA number 8. Hugh Jackson will be available in the Media Center. We'll have that for you live here on CBD, as well as multiple players as well. And then Thursday, we're out at the Cleveland Browns Foundation Golf Tournament.
Yes.
So it should be a fun day.
My neck
on
of the woods.
Thursday as well. Yes, way on the west side.
Are you going to be okay?
I don't know. Do I need a passport?
I don't know. Gibbs, what should he bring to the west side?
It's going to be like the Cavs. I'm going to be stuck in customs somewhere. Anyway, I'm very much looking forward to that. Thanks, everybody, for being with us today. Thanks to Xavier Cooper for coming up. And we learned a lot about that young man, which certainly was a good time there. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying stay tuned for the Golden Boys, and thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.